Hey everyone, it's Abadesi, your host of Product Hunt Radio, where I'm joined by the founders, investors, and makers that are shaping the future of tech. Today, I'm joined by Reshma Sahoni. She's the co-founder of Seedcamp, a pre-Series A fund based out of London. I've been following her work closely and know many of the team. They've got a close relationship with us here at Product Hunt and AngelList, and we cover a lot in this episode. What she's learned in the 12 years of building her fund, the future of tech from personalized healthcare to managing finance, career paths in venture, and how you can develop in the industry, and of course, her favorite products and how her team stays productive. But first, let's hear from our sponsors. So I know that many of our listeners spend most of their day in Gmail and Google Calendar and Drive, pretty typical stuff. And typically, you're managing relationships with anyone from freelancers to clients to investors to vendors to partners to customers. You get the idea. It's a lot. But what if there's a way to remember every name instantly, find every email thread, even from weeks ago, and never forget to follow up on anything again? Because, let's face it, who has the time for that? That's what Copper's for. It's your designated relationship manager, built to look and feel like the G Suite apps you know and love. Actually, it's recommended for G Suite by Google Cloud. Plus, it lets every team, sales, marketing, customer success, and even product, talk to each other and share updates, all in one place. If that doesn't sound like a CRM, you're right. Copper isn't your average CRM. See for yourself. Check out copper.com/producthunt to try a 14-day free trial. Reshma, thank you so much for joining us on Product Hunt Radio today. I'm a huge fan of the work that you do. I know so many of the Seedcamp team. There's a close relationship between Seedcamp and AngelList as well, of course, and Product Hunt's a part of the AngelList family. So I'm really excited to have you here today and get you one-on-one to talk about VC and all things startup. But for people who aren't familiar with the work that you do, please tell us about yourself and your role.
So I'm one of the co-founders of Seedcamp. We started 12 years ago, and we've grown up a lot, as startups do. We've scaled, we've evolved, and we are very much today a pre-Series A fund. So all pre-seed, seed, mainly in Europe, but to the extent those outside of Europe want us around their table, on their cap table, we love to do investments outside of Europe as well. All things tech, mostly areas that are capital efficient and grow fast with venture money.
Amazing. So as you mentioned, Seedcamp is 12 years old. You started in 2007. You were an operator working at companies like Vodafone and 3i before. I'd love to hear the origin story of Seedcamp. So how did it sort of begin, you know, from an idea and then turn into the reality of the fund?
Yeah. And I, to be honest, it was not my idea. It was someone named Saul Klein, who's very active as a venture investor with his dad, Robin Klein, as well for over a decade. And, you know, they're amazing. So it was his idea, and he'd kind of been going around to different venture funds. I was at 3i at the time, talking about this seed camp and a summer, you know, a summer camp of sorts for entrepreneurs and giving them grant funding to start up ideas. And then I was frustrated at 3i. They were quite frustrated with me as well. Tells you a lot about entrepreneurial drive and so forth, right? And kind of where things come from. So mutual frustration. And I said, you know, I'd love to work on this. I can see this. Right? I can see the next decade of helping European entrepreneurs rise to a global scale. And I thought a lot of things were missing in Europe. As you can tell, I have an American accent, having come from the US. And so that was, you know, a thriving ecosystem across all the way to M&A and IPO, a peer group to learn from, mentors and investors who didn't just meet you when you were pitching, but actually just met you throughout and got curious about your idea and your team and product and actually dug into those things. So, you know, so the origin story, as many, many things disruptive, has to do with frustration, to do with, I think, envisioning a 10-year, 20-year opportunity. And Saul's and my vision was quite aligned. And that's hard too when your co-founders coming together, and we hadn't worked together before as well. So I think our journey is quite similar to any kind of startup.
That's amazing. So you've spoken about this frustration with the absence of resources and mindsets that you felt were integral to support startups. Fast forwarding to 2019, 12 years on, has the vision changed, and how has SeedCamp, you know, actualized on that idea that you and Saul initially scoped out?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think it's interesting because throughout this 12-year journey, we've been pushed and pulled into, you know, will you franchise? Will you go late stage? Will you go? And actually, the name in itself is beautiful in the sense that it's constricted. So SeedCamp is very much a pre-series A fund. It will always stay true to its name. That said, we as individuals have evolved and have done a number of things. So the SeedCamp family of entities as such, we've spun out something called Concrete VC, which is an early stage fund investing in prop tech companies. You know, I've been on the advisory board of Credo Ventures, which is a fund out of the Czech Republic in Central Eastern Europe, where 9 years ago, no one cared and no one thought anything would come out of it. And now you have UiPath, which is a massive Romanian success story. So we've done a bunch of things in terms of expanding, but more at a broader level and kept SeedCamp very much tied to its, you know, its roots. And I think it keeps it pure because I think, you know, it resonates with those first time founders, with early stage founders, with knowing there's a place here, center of the universe of Europe, where you can go. And it's got this legacy of a brand and some incredible people that are around it to help build your business.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think SeedCamp is very much a household name on this side of the pond. Lots of early stage founders aspire to hit that status and get that credential of saying that, you know, they have support from you and they're in your portfolio. What are some of the things that you could share with folks who are just starting out? So maybe they've raised their first fund recently and they aspire to be a household name one day, in terms of like early investment with founders. What advice can you give now looking back 12 years into the journey? These are the things that we did that have kept us here and have given us that legacy.
Yeah, a few things. So authenticity, I think it's lived with us 12 years. It's in our name. I've been there 12 years. Carlos and I have worked together on it 10 years. Our newest partners have been here 5. So you're authentically. Yeah. SeedCamp, right? And so I think that's one USP. I think, again, if you look at any ultimate success story of an Amazon, Apple, Google, etc., you can really drill down to some very crucial differentiators, USPs that give them a competitive advantage. And so for us, it's very much that we began as an ecosystem coming together, and that ecosystem was tiny, but it did come together. Yeah. 12 years ago, and it's just grown, and it's grown with us around us, and we're a key part of it still. And so that's stayed our USP through this decade. And then, you know, team wise, there's that dedication. We love seed. We love pre-series A. And so, you know, you have a dedicated team. We have a differentiation. I talk a lot about, we have arbitrage, in terms of pre-seed, that we're able to get into pre-seed, where some of these companies actually don't want pre-seed, but they'll come take it from SeedCamp. At seed, we're in an interesting position. We're often the second largest check-in. Wow. And so we are in a privileged position to advise a founder when they're getting term sheets from all these amazing VCs to say which VC should they work with or do they want to work with. So, I mean, so there's these very crucial USPs. Yeah. That we know them extremely well. Know thyself, I think, and stay true to it. And so I think that's if you are a new fund starting out there, really know those and have those as your advantages. Mm-hmm. They stand the test of time.
That's awesome. I'd love to dive a bit deeper into some of the points you raised, particularly around authenticity and also around team. One of the things I love about SeedCamp is the diversity of people on your team, the different backgrounds, different experiences, like really high caliber talent. And you've got like a pretty healthy sized team as well compared to some of the other funds operating in this space. What advice can you give to, you know, partners who are thinking about expanding their core team that you have learned in terms of identifying and securing good talent?
Yes. So a couple of things, you know, one is we do recruit from odd places. 40% of our team is working mothers. So on the accounting and legal side, it's a job you can do remotely, and it's a job you can do with kids. And so we've recruited folks who are senior, you know, and could be doing other things, but we've given them flexibility around that job. So they've chosen to work with Seedcamp. So it really fits. So their caliber of assessment and analyzing and efficiency is incredible, right? You know, we go to sources of talent that are not your investment bank, consulting, kind of, you know, the usual elite places, which have their own little highway to success. And we kind of look elsewhere. Also, I think what it does is you look elsewhere, you generally tap into people who are hungry. They're right. hungry to prove themselves. Yeah. They're hungry for, you know, getting into that network, into that ecosystem, breaking through. Yeah. And I think I was the same because I was an American Indian immigrant into Europe. And so I wasn't entrenched in any circles yeah. here. And so same thing, I had that hunger of sort of breaking through. So that's on the sourcing. Retention is, so one of the things we say, and look, it has negatives as well. One of the things we say is you're your own CEO of Function X and run it like that. Obviously, the negative is like, how do you get them all to then to work together and talk to each other? So we're conscious of that. And we've known that would happen as a result of telling someone you are the CEO of marketing or tech or whatnot. So we built in online, offline systems to make sure all those pieces connect together. But that autonomy is a huge part of retention. And we set a culture around the things we don't love to do and the things we love to do. So we don't love kind of water cooler chat. So, you know, we're quite verbal about the things that are not part of our culture. Our team meeting is only, I think, once a month and, you know, it has to be an hour and that's it. And you kind of focus on the main point. So a lot of these bits are verbalized very strongly, and that autonomy is part of the retention. And actually, I think exit, we think about exit as well. So we talk about exit, for every person we hire in terms of there may never be because this is a super long term, 10, 20 year time frame for you. Or what would you like to do if you're not here, you know, for the long term? How can we help you in that? Whether that's 2-3 years with us or 1 or 5, what's the next step? And I think, you know, taking that joint ownership and not feeling emotional when someone leaves you is powerful. Philip Mooring, who's at AngelList, who went to AngelList after Seedcamp. Kirsten, who runs Cylon, which is a cybersecurity accelerator. I mean, you know, Ricardo, who's a partner or principal at Cherry Ventures. I mean, you know, we knew that there would be an exit for those folks. They're incredibly talented. Yeah. And we just don't have the space to have that many potential partners in a fund, right? And so I think we were never emotional about it. It was a awesome. And how do we work with you once you leave here? And you're an intern here, but then you started CityMapper. How do we take part in that or help with that?
That's incredible. A lot of really good points in there. Two things in particular really stand out to me. I love how you have made a part of your culture being very open about the things you don't want to do and the things you don't want employees to spend time on. I love reading your Medium articles, and I encourage people listening to check them out. There's this thing called Seedcamp Essentials, where you basically identified, you know, the things that are core to your company. And one of them is this idea that a meeting should never produce another meeting. Like, whatever the purpose of the meeting is should basically be wrapped up in there. And I thought that was really cool because I think we've all worked at companies where people kind of get pulled into meetings for the sake of being a meeting, and you feel like it's not a really productive use of time. So I love that. The other thing I wanted to dive a bit deeper into was your role and your responsibilities. There are a lot of people in the Product Hunt community and also in the AngelList community who aspire to work in venture capital one day, or perhaps are just starting out in their career. It would be great if you could share a bit about what career development as a co-founder of a fund looks like, particularly in terms of what you are responsible for and whether or not that's changed over time.
Great question. And it's a lot to unpick because it's a decade, more than a decade worth, right? And yeah, sure. Our role evolves. I think back to the point of authenticity, though, the four of us are here because we enjoy early stage investing. And so that stays a key, the key part of our role. And I think, you know, we take seriously our promises to our LPs who've invested in our fund, is to, you know, what is our core job? What's our day job? That said, of course, we think of longevity of the Seed Camp brand. And, you know, if it's going to be here for the next 10, 20 years, it won't just be Carlos and me. It'll be, Tom and Sia, who are actually a decade younger than us. And we've been quite proactive in designing that team. And then, you know, and thinking about the generation sort of after, right? So thinking about how to bring those folks through. And so there is a lot of continuous mentoring, but I think we do also try to identify people who take self-ownership of their careers, and we've mentored them alongside of them taking that ownership of their careers. And so, and I would say to any young person out there, find a brand that will do that. And then during that interview process, you talk about that. And so we don't do interviews in the traditional style again either. It's very much a multi-party dialogue around how you'll fit, what are your ambitions, and how do we help, and how do you like to work, and so forth. So the one thing I will say, early in your career. So one of the things, you know, I did investment banking, really just didn't like it. It helps to do things in jobs you don't like, less so later in your life, because I think you have less tolerance for it. And it's not as value add later in your career, but early it's huge. You really figure out what your weaknesses are, and you build some development points around those weaknesses, but you also identify what your strengths are therefore. And so if you're early in your VC career, I think really understand how those fit into the team. Is that a complementary set of strengths you're bringing to the team, or is that redundant? Will you have a counterbalance for your weaknesses in that team, or are you as a brand going to look weak? So one of the things brands can often look weak on is relationships, right? The ability of anyone on a particular team to build relationships with founders and empathy and be seen as part of the founder table as such. So, you know, if you kind of lack on that, if the team you're joining similarly lacks on it, that's a problem for the brand. So we really think about kind of that whole, set of shapes fitting together.
Nice. Yes. I love that you've touched on being holistic and thinking of how all the pieces fit together. Again, it stays true to this like authentic commitment to creating an ecosystem. I wanted to talk a bit about value add VCs. This is sort of the beginnings of Seed Camp and why you were so passionate about starting. I wonder, in your view, what do you feel are best practices that VCs should be adopting in terms of adding more than just capital to their portfolio's experience? And do you feel that venture is getting better at doing more than just providing money?
I'll answer the last bit first, which is absolutely venture's getting better at adding more than money, because money is getting very commoditized. We're participants in that commoditization. So is AngelList, critically as well, in democratizing access from the top of money all the way to the lower rungs of money, right? And so as that happens, the pressure is, we'll want more. So absolutely, venture capital has improved. In terms of what that encompasses then, I think for us as an example, it's evolved. I think 2007-08 or so, it was a lot about, you know, there weren't serial entrepreneurs in Europe. Skype hadn't had its moment as much of, you know, having that next generation of TransferWise's and so forth. Google, Yahoo were really pulling people in versus people leaving those companies. And that's obviously dramatically changed now. So I think the value add there was, what does ambition look like? What does a global tech startup look like? What's the right talent look like? What does setting up in the US versus Europe look like? So it was a lot of that. And I would say it was much more push model around value add, whereas we've evolved 12 years on to very much become a pull model. The founders we back and the founders who gravitate to us wouldn't gravitate to us for the value add from 12 years ago. Mm. They gravitate to us now for different value add. And so for our recognition has been that we don't have to do push. We need to aggregate the right resources. But the pull is the fact that we have 320 companies, which means there are 700-800 founders. What do those founders need? Well, they really want to buy and sell from each other. They want each other to be their first kind of beta testers. They don't want product feedback from us. They want it from each other. Yeah. We just had a sales workshop today. Cool. It's facilitated by our venture partner, but really the discussion is an open, intimate discussion around a few companies at similar stages around sales tactics. All the bits where we've seen real exponential changes in companies come from these kinds of little tricks and little things you can, little hacks you can learn from each other. So that, you know, so I think back to, again, if you're a fund out there looking at value add, it needs to be responsive to your founders. And if you've built a strategy around the kinds of stages and founders and sectors you're backing, you then have to look back at it and say, okay, now that we've fulfilled that, well, what does that group require? And I think you can't just sort of, you can't let the press leads you on that. When you see press or something, oh, someone hired a head of talent, oh, someone hired, you know, so-and-so community manager, this, that platform. You can't let that lead you. You have to, you know, look back into, well, what's my portfolio? Is our portfolio 30 companies or is it 300? It's a very different value add need.
Yeah, I think that's incredible that you identify almost going to like the initial like purpose and like what you're trying to achieve and thinking backwards from that. That's really powerful. I also like that you touch on like the power of, you know, process knowledge and like informal hacks and tips and tricks. I think that's the beauty of community. Like we see that happen a lot with Makers and Product Hunt. There's a lot of nuance in the experience of running a company that like, you know, no amount of podcasts or articles can like help you find the right answer for. And exactly as you said, sometimes it just takes having an honest conversation with someone who is at that level or who's been that, been there before to help you find the right solution. So I love that you facilitate these like, you know, very purpose-driven kind of like sessions for your founders to help them achieve that. That's great.
And we absolutely, I think, you know, tell our founders to go onto Product Hunt and other resources where you can get sort of level one knowledge on all these things, but then that real kind of, you know, magic is in a lot more of that offline interaction.
Amazing.
How much should you offer top tech talent? At Vettery, they've got the numbers to help you stay competitive and keep your candidate pipeline full. With thousands of matches made across tech, sales, and finance, Vettery's data is integral to a smarter recruiting strategy. Their 2019 Tech Salary Report includes average salary by role, premium programming skills, and more. It's everything you need to hire talented engineers, data scientists, and designers, helping you build the next generation of your business. Visit vettery.com/tech salary. That is vettery.com/tech salary to dig into the data today.
I wanted to touch on something a bit more controversial. One of the things that I've noticed in Product Hunt is that more founders and makers are opening up about the toil of the journey. So the other things that come with trying to start a business and, you know, trying to get your first customers or, you know, close your first round, the loneliness that sometimes comes with that, or the mental health issues that come with that. Do you feel that this is the kind of support that VCs should provide, or what role can, let's say, an investor play in ensuring that their founder is set up for success, even if they're facing some obstacles that are outside the office?
Yeah. And look, again, I think the nature of some of these issues popping up more now than they did 20 years ago, 50 years ago is the pressures have changed too, and venture capital pressures have changed too. I mean, more markets have become winner take all. More markets, you can quantify, you know, every metric in across every part of your business, and so there's always a microscope on that and a magnifying glass on any mistakes and so forth. So those pressures are real. There was that more that balance before that was natural, whereas now you have to bring in the balance, I guess, a bit more artificially. You know, founder talent tends to be younger with maybe less natural barriers to working 24/7. So for me, I have two kids. That's a natural barrier to working 24/7. I do have to go feed them and nurture them. So those topics then, you know, need to be brought in, and us as VCs have a role. We're human at the end of the day as well. And so I think, but that said, we also have a job. It's returning capital and returning multiples thereof. So we've done different things. We've taken an investment approach in companies like Spill, like Pepe, which offers services for parents coming back from maternity, paternity, and sort of even menopause and, you know, life happenings that nowadays, because work is everything, mm-hmm. you need to deal with some of these things while you're, you know, within the work sphere. So we've done kind of investments, but we think of them as commercially driven as well, which is that, you know, health spending is changing, finance is changing, I mean, and society is changing. So that's a powerful opportunity. So we've done that. Two, actually building up communities. So ensuring that they feel they're part of a peer network and a founder network where they can go for the beers and pizza or whatnot and have, you know, where we're not involved at all. We're, again, just facilitators and giving them an opportunity to help build those communities where they can share and talk openly with each other. When we bring in mentors, definitely we've started to include more kind of coaches and other mentors as well. But I mean, again, I don't think it would be as authentic to sort of sit at a board meeting or something and really, you know, dig into what issues are going on. I think you need a different safe space to do that.
That makes sense. I like that. I like this idea of kind of putting your money where your mouth is and actually saying there are people out there building really great solutions to these problems. So let's invest that way. I think that's really cool. So at Product Hunt, we're obsessed with the future of tech. I know that you're always quite open with, you know, where you've invested and, you know, what your portfolio looks like. I was looking at some data from 2016 and predominantly, you know, we saw fintech companies, SaaS companies. You've mentioned some of your projects in the prop tech space. What are the sort of verticals or trends that you're really excited about and SeedCamp is investing in?
I mean, absolutely, I think machines and machines as high impact across organizations. You know, particularly you see that with UiPath, but I think UiPath has become increasingly a platform business, and we're seeing all kinds of startups, you know, within that realm also come, and we're investing in some of those. So I think thinking about how machines can work with humans, especially in the professional sphere, work in progress, I think. But, you know, that area, I mentioned already, you know, personal issues incorporated into work. It ties into future work too. You know, it is changing dramatically. I mean, I think there's just such disruption across society and what we should, how, you know, how society should function. It isn't what work needs to pay for and what individuals pay for and so forth. So I think those are pretty massive changes. So society and work kind of, you know, coming together. We're investing in that. Also ties a little bit too, but it's all on its own is sort of personalized health. Okay. We've made a number of investments in personalized health. We think that's the biggest opportunity humanity's had. Industrial revolution, fintech, I mean, they're great, but health is, you know, it's ever changing. Never, today's health is not the same as yesterday's health. Obviously, science tells you not all of us are the same, so you need personalized solutions. So we believe a lot in that, and so we're investing in that. You know, certainly fintech continues. We took some low-hanging fruit kind of bets or investments in 2011, 2016, 2017. We're going deeper in the stack now. We think, you know, banking will change so dramatically in the future. So yeah, those are all areas. Also, I think, you know, VR and kind of crypto, we're investing more in the picks and shovels of crypto rather than really, you know, crypto in the end of itself, basically. So yeah, those are a bunch of different areas.
That's amazing. Are there any personalized health products that you could recommend our community check out?
Yes. I mean, here in the UK so far now is Thriva. So you do a blood test every quarter. You know, I think we think of them as a API for blood. Nice. And so whether, you know, if that changes to a weekly measurement or daily even, I think they move into that direction, right? But if you can monitor your blood or aspects about your health more regularly, you can just be much more preventative.
Yes.
Than all the massive cost base it takes to cure, right? And so Thrive as an example, Sano Genetics, they're going to be offering genetic kits soon. Mm-hmm. So you can map out your genome.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is on payments, like none of, you know, all of this used to just be, I go to the hospital and the hospital tells me what to do and I do it and I hope I live. Like, you know, now it's changing to, I will, rather than spending on clothes or whatever, drinks or whatever, I will spend on fitness and health. So the disposable spend has changed dramatically. And you, you know, you take your wallet and what you kind of spend it on is more experiences, more health. And
yeah, that's amazing. I have a friend who is obsessed with Thriver, and she is using it to kind of like biohack herself. So obviously Thriver will give you like a lot of stats on like, you know, what level is your, you know, B12, vitamin D, you need to like cut down your cholesterol, etc. So she's got like the premium package, and what she does is like every month try to like exercise more and eat healthier so that she can improve her metrics and basically improve her longevity. So I thought that was pretty cool. It's like she's managed to like gamify health for herself.
Oh, absolutely.
With the data that
absolutely. No, and for me, I was when I was pregnant, I got diagnosed as borderline gestational diabetes, which only happens when you are pregnant. That said, you got markers there, and you know, I'm South Asian, so we have a proclivity to diabetes longer term. So I did my Thriver test, and that one indicator is definitely trending upwards, you know, post-pregnancy and pre-pregnancy. So it's not just that during pregnancy this was an issue. It is there, and it, you know, it gives you an indicator of, well, you have time, you have 5 years to fix it. You know, either you're going to do that, or, well, you're again going to be into kind of, you know, management mode, right?
Yes, that's amazing. So now I'm going to talk a bit about your role as like a thought leader within the industry and someone who wants to support, you know, the growth of startups and the startup ecosystem. In 2016 at Startup Grind, you spoke very passionately about London being one of the best places to be an early stage founder, pre-series A founder. Things have changed in terms of like access to talent in London and the UK, which you've spoken about quite openly. Is this something that you are concerned about, like in terms of access to talent for the ecosystem if things don't change?
Absolutely. I mean, I think as things have developed, similar problem to what San Francisco faces as well, cost of living.
Yeah.
And just, you know, transport networks and things breaking apart because there's been such a gravitational force in London. So yeah, we do worry about that. And particularly again with the Brexit word as well, you know, it's so inconsistent, kind of the messaging coming out at the more central level of what's really going to happen and when, if at all. So that volatility is definitely a concern. We've absolutely seen ramifications of it. So we've had companies move out of London. Wow. And base themselves in New York or Berlin or elsewhere. You know, it's interesting. You invest in that talent. It's worked out, funnily enough, for this one company that moved up sticks and went to New York. Okay. Is they've gotten a tier one US VC to lead their next round.
Wow. So,
there you go, right? But I mean, and I think, again, if you're listening to this, and if you have power to do something, you should, though, recognize that now that company's gone and it's in the hands of a US VC. And so there you go. That's lost for the UK venture capitalists and talent, because that business now won't grow in London to become a 500-person organization. It's going to do that in New York and Berlin, most likely, right? So that's a concern. That said, again, you know, London is central. I mean, there is still just so much that comes in and out, extremely connected. And I think advances, obviously, in remote work and being able to be flexible, remote, etc., do help the challenges we see with continuing to attract talent into central London.
Amazing. So before we wrap up, I love to ask every guest, you know, being product hunt, we have to talk about the products. So what are the products that the Seed Camp team rely on? And then on a personal note, what are the products that you love, whether it's software or hardware?
Yeah, so I mean, Seed Camp is, you know, heavily reliant, and we're actually putting together a list of 150 suppliers our companies
cool.
use. So what do we use as a venture capital firm? I mean, we're on Airtable. We've integrated a lot into that, basically. Streak we use sort of for deal flow management. Obviously, our mail system is on Gmail. So I don't know what we would do without that. We are just crazy users of Telegram and
nice.
And WhatsApp. We actually don't use Slack so much. It was really funny. I mean, Slack turned out into a very noisy channel for
yeah.
us. And especially when I think we just want to have point conversations with our companies on certain things. So Telegram, WhatsApp has been amazing for that. So yeah, these are the day-to-day kind of religiously used.
Are these the ones that dominate your home screen? What about technology that you use in your personal life or like at home?
Some of our fintech products for sure. You know, huge user of TransferWise for big transactions, huge user of Revolut for peer-to-peer transactions, Curve for kind of bringing it all together. We use Plio, actually, one of our companies, for all our corporate management or corporate expenses. And so that's like my home screen. Okay, Deliveroo, because
you know, hungry.
Exactly. My son uses it well as well. Actually, funny enough, my son borrowed my Kindle to be nice to him, stole it basically. And then at 11 o'clock at night, I got a notification. Thank God for notifications. He had spent $700 because I didn't think I needed to lock the password. And so, yeah, he had spent $700 buying food and socks, which I thought was quite practical and proud. But yeah, we had a conversation about that. And he had shipped it to California.
Wow.
And so, fascinating, 6 years old.
6 years old? Yeah. Was he buying Wagyu beef?
He bought $80 worth of Pringles. Like packs and packs of Pringles.
That's hilarious. That's incredible. Okay, well, Reshma, thank you so much for your time. For people listening who are now interested in checking out Seedcamp, maybe even applying for some investment, where can they find you?
Everything's at seedcamp.com. We have a beautiful, fun type form that they can go through for pre-seed. And if you are a seed company, that is through network. So find someone who knows us well and then come through that.
Amazing. And where can they follow you personally on socials?
R. Sahoni on Twitter. And on Instagram, I only talk about tacos.
Okay, nice. I love tacos, so I'll check it out. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, share the podcast with your friends on Twitter and tag a guest you'd like to hear in a future episode. See you soon.